You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God. Now, today's guest speaker.
Good morning and welcome to Unity of Tustin. This morning is our first Sunday of our sabbatical time, and it's so great to see everyone here this morning. If you would join me in prayer as we begin our service. I want to share a reading from Rumi. Sometimes you hear a voice through the door calling you. As fish out of water hear the waves, or a hunting falcon hears the drums come back. This turning toward what you deeply love saves you. This turning toward what you deeply love saves you. And so, beloved one, we turn toward that which we deeply love. We turn toward you, knowing that you deeply love us back. We turn toward one another in community and in love. And we turn inward, loving ourselves. Call us by love, and you call us home today. And so we presence ourselves for this moment, for this hour, not knowing what to expect, but expecting. And we honor the beloved in ourselves and in one another, in this community and in this world. And so it is. Amen.
Welcome, my beloved Andrew. Together, actually, we're responsible for this holy child.
There is another kind of lovemaking which produces. That's true, actually. I think we're coming into this age where we're going to experience very startling, new, amazing relationships. And they're relationships of the soul. They have everything in it. They have the mind in it, the body's in it. But the soul is leading. And this is wonderful because it opens up whole new realms of creativity. When two people who are in love with love come together and encourage and honor and respect each other, then they can give birth together to amazing new possibilities. It's part of the revolution of love that's happening in the middle of all the chaotic, terrible, destructive madness. And this book is a really the child of a long friendship, long, deep soul friendship. I came many times to Tustin over 20 years when Marge was here. And like many other of the teachers in America, we always knew that we could find a home here with you, because you honored the path and honored the transcendent and honored all cutting-edge teachers, as you're a cutting-edge teacher. And during those visits, I became very deeply a friend of Marge's. I fell in love with her wild, holy spirit. And the time came when I really wanted to say to Marge, it is time to give birth in your own right. You've been such a loving helper of ours. You're such an awake person yourself. Now join the greatest revolution on the planet, which is the revolution of the sacred feminine, and voice your own great holy feminine voice. Because it is so important at this moment that the awake women speak. The Dalai Lama has told us the world will be saved by women. And in the deepest sense, that means the world will be saved by the return of the wisdom and the love and the passionate compassion of the mother side of God. Because it's that wisdom and passionate compassion that we all now need to be inflamed and possessed by, so that we have the courage to stand up for justice and stand up for harmony and stand up for peace against all the forces that are now so obviously destroying our planet. And if you don't see them today, you're going to see them by the end of next week. And if the end of next week isn't there, you'll see them by the end of next the week after, because this process, this crisis is getting fiercer and fiercer and fiercer and fiercer and fiercer and will get fiercer, because its purpose is to initiate us into our true selves, to wake us up, to bring us together, so that together we can say no to all the structures of cold evil and yes to a world of justice and harmony and compassion and truth. This is what's happening. And when you know that, you don't get afraid. And when you know that, you take the journey into love to be empowered by love. Marge has taken this journey, and this book is the distillation of a lifetime's passion. And what she's found, which moves me so much, is a unique voice, a sacred feminine elder woman voice that is very naked about her own struggles and difficulties. It's wonderful to be at the age where you don't give a damn anymore what people think of you. And you could just show yourself as you are, ragged and radiant. And Marge has found this voice that is so tender and illumined and reaching out as an elder woman would do, inspired by the mother, to others. And you'll find when you read the book, and you absolutely must read this book, you'll find that it is constantly inviting you into the book. Guys tend to write books in which they appear wrapped in imaginary robes, telling everybody exactly what to do. I've done a lot of this myself, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. But what I love in the work of the holy women is this warmer, more inclusive tone, which guys need to learn from. And it's very beautiful part of your book, that reaching out and that giving of exercises. So you have the sense that you have a grandmother of your soul sitting with you with enormous humor and enormous intelligence and some beady-eyed flashes, giving you guidance at the deepest level as to how to bring your life into the next level of embodiment of love. So I just salute you so much for what you have done all your life, and for what you've given me, for what you've given this church, for all the teachers that you've welcomed in, all of whom remember you with such love and gratitude. And most of all, for this period in your life, because now you're going to distill even further everything that you've learned, because you've found this grandmother tone that we so need to listen to. Blessed are the grandmothers, for they shall kick our ass and make us human. That's the unofficial line in the Beatitude.
You know, as I invited all of you to sort of do a vast survey of letting Spirit reveal to you the meaning of your life, I hope you took that seriously. Because it wasn't just a guided meditation. It was an invitation into realizing and living and manifesting a destiny and a purpose that you don't even have a clue about yet. No matter what age you are, whether you're in your 20s, and the youngest person that identified herself as in her 20s in the intensive, had that vision, had that dream. She's a member of the choir. And whether you're in your 30s, whether you're in your 40s, going through your midlife crisis, that's what psychologists might tell you it is. It's not. It is your midlife emergence, moving you into the journey of your soul. And it's going to be faster and different and more beautiful and more incredible than you can even imagine. Whether you're in your 50s or whether you're in your 60s and you think you might be close to the end, you're not. I didn't get the assignment for this book until Andrew showed up for about the seventh or eighth time with his ferociousness. I was at a retreat at the International Institute or Institute for Noetic Science in Petaluma. And Andrew was doing a five-day beautiful, deep, deep, deep retreat on the sacred mystical marriage, which is what we're going to be doing this afternoon, a very abbreviated version of 5 days and 3 hours, and then tomorrow night.
Do you remember Monty Python when they had those wonderful moments where you have to tell the whole plot of Proust's 14 volumes in 1 minute? This is what this afternoon is going to be like.
We're going to do that dance of your inner divine masculine and your inner divine feminine, and whether you're showing up in a masculine or feminine body, you're going to experience both of them unless you constrict, which can happen.
And this is so important because at this moment, as part of the birth of a new humanity that's taking place, and I think we all recognize it in one way or another, and this birth is taking place as it must take place through a savage death, a death of the old ideas, the old concepts, the old institutions that are clearly not serving us anymore because they've created an almost suicidal situation in this country and all over the world and in environmental destruction and in the genocide of the animals and in the horrible, horrible suffering that our addictions to power are now visiting on the planet. But the great good news, and it is great good news, is that a birth is taking place. And as one of the central parts of this birth, the masculine and the feminine are coming together in a new combination in each human being to breed a new kind of human being. So that men won't be addicted to just to a narrow vision of what masculinity is, that masculinity will be permeated with the glow of the feminine, and women will be able to claim their authoritative masculine without losing their extraordinary gifts of love and cherishing and nourishing. This is a revolution. It's a revolution of liberation. And from that liberation to live that marriage inside yourself, whether you're a man or a woman or gay or straight or, like Barney Parsons at Oxford, pansexual. We had this friend called Barney Parsons who was uncontrollable, and we said that in a crisis a lamppost would do. But whatever journey you are on, and God bless Barney, he's sobered down, he has 5 children and he's doing well. Whatever path you are on, your task is to bring together the two great powers of the universe in the Godhead. The power of the masculine beauty and naked truth with the unbelievable generosity and passion of the feminine. This is everybody's task. And in Marge, you see somebody who has a very passionate masculine side. You can see it. She's pretty directive at times, and I love that because I love that in women. I'm not frightened of it. I celebrate it. And she has that glowing grandmother heart, and she's brought the two together. And I'm trying in my own ragged but enthusiastic way to do the same because I have a very strong masculine, but I have an equally strong feminine. And I think that in our love relationship and in this book, we're modeling that marriage that is really trying to take place in everyone at this moment. But the secret to the marriage is to adore the feminine, because the feminine has been so negated. You can't have a marriage when the bride is in a cellar with duct tape over her mouth, strapped to a chair. Right? Which is what the fate of the feminine has been for centuries. Now is the time to bring the bride back and celebrate the bride in all of her beauty and her ferocity and her clarity and her naked hunger for a new world, and to marry that bride with the real masculine, which is not the despotic, power-driven, psychotic masculine, but the masculine that adores the feminine and longs to protect and nurture and nourish the feminine, because the masculine knows that life is feminine.
So this afternoon is the preliminary to the sacred marriage. And the vows ceremony is going to be Monday evening from 7 to 9. However, I forgot to announce this at 9 o'clock. There's an early bird special. You can see I'm getting some influence from my learning about how to do the World Wide Web. An early bird special. At 6 o'clock, we're going to be showing on the big screen the most exquisite film of the dance of the divine marriage that I have ever seen. It's in multicolors, and it's by you and your dear friend.
Well, I have to tell you that it does not contain, unfortunately, any of my dancing. And the reason is because Benafshe is just so jealous of my dancing that she excluded me from the film. This woman, Benafshe Sayad, is the greatest sacred dancer on the planet. And she is an Iranian, and she's permeated and saturated with the spirit of Rumi. And she brings together the most rigorous discipline with the most abandoned passion, grounded in peace. So you're going to see, when you come to the film, as I hope you all will, you will see love embodied in a woman, but with the force of the masculine and the amazing seductive tenderness of a woman. Both are present in this amazing way. And what the film is we go through all the different stages of the path to love, because love, you have to be prepared for love by multiple ordeals and revelations, because ultimately you're going to discover something so shattering about love that if you're not strong enough to contain the radiant good news that will come, you'll splinter in a million pieces. But if you have built the container, you'll be able to assume your real dignity, your real radiance. And Benafshe takes us through all of these stages so that you can see how love transforms and transfigures you. And I come on, thank God, in between, and we talk about the different stages. And as I say, the only unfortunate thing is that you never get to see my flamenco.
It's exquisite.
It's an amazing piece of work. She's the greatest dancer in the world. There's nobody like her. And many of the great dancers worship her and come to learn from her, because she's not just a great dancer, she's a great master. She's a master of mystical truth, and she's finding a way through her dancing to help us all become dancers, What does love want of you? What does love want of you? Love wants to take you over, possess you, and get you into the place where you're prepared to dance for love in every way that you can, with your particular gifts. And that reminds me of a story. Can I tell this hilarious and wonderful story? This is my favorite story. And I think it's true of everyone in this room. And it's true of the Dalai Lama, it's true of Rumi, it's true of Ramakrishna, it's true of everyone. In the Middle Ages, jugglers were very much looked down on. They were kind of thugs, you know. And an old juggler found himself at the end of his life taken in by charity into the convent of Notre Dame. And he was terribly impressed by the monks. They knew Latin and they were very holy and they wandered about being very superior. And he felt, oh my God, what can I do? I don't know Latin. I've spent this crazy life getting drunk on the streets and behaving badly and juggling and perhaps stealing sometimes. I have nothing to offer her, the Virgin. And then one night he said, no, this isn't true, actually. I'm a juggler. So he crept into the cathedral of Notre Dame. And he put on his old ragged costumes and he just juggled for her. And one night, not long afterwards, the monks, who had been seeing that he was leaving, going somewhere, followed him. A couple of monks followed him. And they saw this incredible sight in that holy cathedral, and the old juggler in ragged clothes juggling for the Virgin. And they were outraged. You know how monks get. And they stepped towards him to try and stop him. And at that moment, and I believe this, the Virgin herself appeared. And she said, he's giving me all that he is and all that he has. And I bless him with all that I am. And at that moment, she took him in her arms and they went off to heaven together. So you're not expected to be Rumi or Ramakrishna or Jane Goodall. You're expected to be yourself, to turn up as yourself and juggle for her. Just gamble your life away, your resources, your gifts, whatever they are, for her, for the mother, for the divine beauty, for the divine truth. And if you do that, it doesn't matter whether you're the richest man in the world or the poorest person in the world or very brilliant or slightly dumb. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you turn up and juggle with your gifts for God, and you will be blessed beyond imagining for that.
So one of the things that we did on Friday night was to honor people who have juggled for God here at Unity in Tustin. And one of the people that was here, that many of you may not even know who he was or who blessed you, his name was James Fink. And I called him on Friday night the Brother Lawrence of Unity. He was the custodian, the janitor, who kept with exquisite care and beauty all of the buildings and all of the rooms, just amazing beauty that he graced us with.
I'm sure all of you know some of your dreadful qualities. And I'm sure if you don't know, you're constantly told by your friends and by the voices of a culture that want to keep you in a state of depression and anxiety about yourself. But if I would give you any advice, I would say, tonight, make a list of your five real qualities that you know you have. And look into the mirror and speak out those qualities to the mirror and realize that you are beginning really to embody them and claim the responsibility to embody them and use them for your juggling in this mad world. It's very important to have divine pride as well as very great humility. And if you could combine the humility that comes from knowing your faults, your shadows, your inadequacies, with the divine pride that comes from knowing the great gifts that have been given all of us, then you can go forward with humble magnificence in your life and really do what we're all called to do at this moment, which is to gamble our lives away for God, to risk being real in an unreal, collapsing world, to face squarely that we're in a world that could die out soon if we don't rise up to help, and then calmly and grounded in the spirit to, with unsteady radiance, get to our feet and do something that reflects our gifts and truly contributes to the transformation of the race. That's where we are, and that's what we're called to. And that's why this book is of great help, because although it doesn't talk about this tremendous crisis so much, what it does do is give you steps to really begin to appreciate the depth of your life and how love has already been working in your life, and to give you tremendous help as to how you can make that more conscious, more alive, more vibrant, more electric, and how you can slowly become aware of the map that the mystics know. There is a map of this great transformation, and the mystical systems know it. And when you begin to realize that there is something inside you which belongs to you by grace, which is like the seed of a great tree that can grow up through all of you and eventually expand into bottomless, ecstatic, tender, sober, grounded, universal love, then, my God, you begin to realize, I'm not just this crazy neurotic wreck, which I also am, but I am also this extraordinary being like everyone else that is being grown in this garden of love by the great gardener that is the beloved. And at that moment, your life becomes miraculous. And that's what Marge is inviting us all to, is a life of miracles. Everything is miraculous. This miraculous we're all here, and that you're listening to this madman talk to you about these things. It's miraculous that we live in a time in which everything is being revealed. The full horror of our madness is being revealed, but also the full potential glory of who we could be if we claimed our divine identity is being revealed. We're very lucky to live in a time that will make it very hard for us to be inauthentic. We'll have to turn up and be real or just die out. So embrace the grace, my friends, and do the path, and blaze, and juggle, and gamble, and be naughty and wild and happy doing it.
The other interesting thing, and this may surprise you, is if you try to figure it out with your rational mind,
oh God,
you will fail. If you think you know that you're in charge of it, you will drastically fail, because the people that try to do that are destined to fail.
Absolutely.
What you have to do is to be in the dance with the mystical, in the dance with the ordinary. That this book has so much ordinary in it. And it is encased, it is held in the extraordinary. You won't have any way to figure it out. You will not know what you're going to be called to do. You can't know. Because you are going to be just like a baby was when you came out of the womb. That little baby that your mother held or didn't hold in her arms was you, and you didn't have the plan of your life yet. Well, guess what? There are two more times when that same level of innocence and not knowing and shift occurs. That's what it's about. In these stages of love emerging, One of them will happen as you go into the subtle realms and begin to live from the invisible rather than the concrete operational, where you see chairs and tables and hold things in your hands and think you can manipulate the world. Well, that's a two-year-old or three-year-old kind of phase. And then you begin to function in that realm of the realm of the subtle. And you begin to know it, but guess what? You can read about some of it in the book, but you won't only know that cognitively. You will not know it until you say yes to the experience of it in your own life and live it. Live it. It's called experiential learning. There's a realm beyond that. That's the realm that is the vastness of the all that is. Some call it God. Some call it beloved. Some call it spirit.
And it has no name.
And you know it because it has been guiding you and directing you and leading you and bringing you into relationship with all of the imprints of your life, including the things that were tough, the things that were joyful, including the things that gave you immense joy and the things that gave you immense sorrow and loss. All of it exquisitely, exquisitely perfect for the emergence of you as a soul of destiny that could guide others through. That part is Site 8 of the gardens. It's less visible in this book because this book is designed for ordinary and extraordinary people. It has Bible in it, mystically talked about in ordinary language. It has mystery in it that is coded in ordinary words, and stories in it that are really not stories, because stories are often ego stories. That's not what it is. You will never get there with your ego. The stories are parables of your soul. This book is a soul manual. Thank you. And it's just such a gift. Well, all this weekend, I've been wearing the ordinary in different colors. Even changed colors midday yesterday.
It's like Liberace she's been. It's fabulous. I feel very jealous. I didn't bring enough clothes myself. I wouldn't.
But just see how ordinary it is. I love being ordinary now. It's like being able to be invisible in a crowd. You think you're ordinary. What I will tell you is you're not. You are the divine. You are embodied for purpose and destiny. And it will reveal itself to you in the whispers, in the stillness, if you are willing. If you happen to buy the book, I want you to know that even though the price on the book might have seemed a little high for you, especially if you got the hardback, the reason is because your love story is part of this book. And you had to pay for the extra blank pages that I demanded with the ferocious furious energy of Andrew Harvey that the publisher put in. Because your love story is part of the thousand-piece puzzle of this universal pattern. And without you, that thousand-piece puzzle can't be completed. It requires you. You are part of the love story. And we're traveling through the garden. We'll be there this afternoon and tomorrow night. If you think, well, I didn't get here for the first pieces of it, you can pick up enough from reading the book that you'll be fine. And so join us as we come to the garden. It's a sacred garden, so that's three stories in one. It's three stories because it's the story of this sacred garden that you love so much. It's the story of my life in part, just glimpses. There's still a few secrets that I didn't reveal. And there's your story that is still to be written.
I just want to end by telling you a story. When I was writing my book, The Hope, which is the book that launched the movement of sacred activism that is now going global, because many, many people are realizing that unless we have a movement of love in action on the planet, we will lose the planet. When I was writing that book, I went through a period of enormous grief and enormous depression, not just at what I saw in the world and what I saw in the lack of response to the chaos that is so baffling. My God, everything is going, and we're still sipping our Chardonnays and imagining that somebody will appear to do it for us. No, they're not going to appear for it. It's either us or nothing. All of that was going on in my mind, and I had an afternoon in which I lived through all my own failures. It's wonderful to be able to see everybody else's failures, and I'm very good at that. But what's really terrifying is to sit in a room and have the divine remorselessly and relentlessly show you all the ways you have betrayed, all the ways you've betrayed yourself, all the ways you have misunderstood, or as George Bush would say, misunderestimated reality. And it was an inexorable and really searing experience. And I thought, oh my God, I have really done all these things, made all these mistakes, failed in all of these ways. How terrible, given everything that I've been given. And at the end of this orgy of blame, which went on for 2 or 3 hours, and it was unforgettable, I heard laughter. And the laughter then subsided, and I heard, I think it was the Christ, that's how I interpreted it, I heard a voice say, well, what you found out about yourself is not unknown to the divine. And you've been boundlessly loved in all your lunacy as you are now in your becoming sane gradually. So don't get your knickers in a twist. And the second thing it said, the voice, which was the most beautiful thing that I could hear, was that it repeated the words of the gospel in which Jesus says of Mary Magdalene, when they accuse her of all the things that they accuse her, she will be forgiven because she loved much. And at that moment I realized that we are not going to be judged for our mistakes. Obviously we make mistakes, we're idiots. We're not going to be judged by our failures. Obviously we fail again and again. We're not even going to be judged, actually. But one thing will be crucial, one question. And that question will be, how much did you love? And what were you prepared to do in the name of love to reach out to others, to help others in the worst period of human history? What did you do while the world was burning? And I tell you that story because many of you, when you come to the work of a real mystic will feel, oh, I'll never get there. I can't do this. I'm just crazy and ordinary, and it will never be me. It was Rumi, it was Ramakrishna, it's Marge, or it's Andrew, but it's not me. This is a way of your ego saying to you, I don't have to try. All you have to do, my dear friends, is to let out the deep longing in your heart for God, for love. Just to let it out, to admit that at the core of you there is a passion to know the truth of who you are, the world, and of the divine. And just stay with that passion and do simple practices in your heart. And love will do the rest. Turn up as a lover. Nakedly, humbly, acknowledging that as yet we know nothing of love. And love will not only forgive you because you love, love will guide you in the most amazing ways. So I just want to end by three excerpts from the Song of Songs. The Song of Songs is the most beautiful book in the Bible, and originally it was Syrian wedding hymns, but it's the deepest mystical text in the Bible because it breathes the perfume of this divine love relationship in a way that nothing else apart from the poetry of Rumi does. So if you close your eyes now and do something very, very daring now. Connect with the part of you that is famished for divine love, famished to know who you really are, famished to understand your place in this burning, churning madhouse that is the world, famished to understand your mission, and hopelessly in love with a mystery you and I will never understand. Just connect to that place. This is the deepest and most sacred place in all of us. And then listen to these words that the bride says to the bridegroom in the Song of Songs, that your heart is always saying, whether you hear it or not, to the great heart that it is one with. Because the heart always knows, it's the mind that gets lost. And here are the words. I am my beloved's, and he is mine. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field and lodge in the villages. Let us go up early to the vineyards. Let us see whether the vine has budded, whether the grape has opened and the pomegranates are in bloom. There will I give you my love. The mandrakes give forth fragrance, and at our doors are all manner of precious fruits, new and old, which I have laid up for you, O my beloved. I am my beloved's, and he is mine. And then this astounding passage where the bride begs the beloved, in these words, and this is what your heart is always begging the great heart. And as soon as you attune yourself to your real heart, you'll know that silently it's always saying these words to the beloved. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. For love is as strong as death, and jealousy is cruel as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, a most vehement flame. Many waters cannot quench love, nor can floods drown it. If a man would give all the wealth of his house for love, it would be utterly scorned. You are on a journey to discover yourself as a universal divine human being. And wherever you start this journey, doesn't matter. We all start it in different strange places with all our karmas and traumas and limitations. Just remember always that the love that you are truly in love with is infinitely merciful and will, if you turn to it, take you through everything you need, good and bad, terrible and amazing, to be able one day to stand the beauty of who you really are.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.